Well, stay tuned in just a minute here. We'll be checking in with Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. All later on, Park City Council Member Becca Gerber with a recap of last night's meeting. And finally, I'll be talking with Park City Foundation Executive Director Katie Wright, along with the winner of this year's Women's Giving Fund $40,000 grant recipient, the CEO of Holy Cross Ministries, Emmy Gardner. Stay tuned. Well, on the phone now with a look at some of the development projects happening in and around Summit County, I have Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with any new applications that have come through the door in the last month.
Every time we start our conversation, you ask me this, and I say we're busy. I try to be a little bit more prepared for our talk this morning and collected what has come in just in the month since we talked last time. We've gotten 30 development permit applications, and they literally run the gamut. I mean, by way of example, we have a permit in, an application permit in, from Smith's Grocery Store in Kimball Junction. They want to do an expansion onto that building. Now, granted, not a large one, about 3,000 square foot expansion onto the back. Apparently, they are so busy, given the period of time that we see ourselves in, they're having a hard time keeping store supplies, groceries, and food in the store. They're running out of space. So they're going to be looking at doing a small expansion specifically for that. So that's an example. When we talk about low-impact permits, that would be one of them.
Okay, but wait. Pat, they also had had an application, I thought, for some kind of tavern, in-store tavern. Whatever happened to that?
That never advanced. That was a year or two back, and I'm sure it was probably logistical reasons for the store and the company. They never moved that idea forward. But again, what they did come back is with this expansion area, and it's primarily, it won't be for public areas, it'll be primarily for back of house stock storage purposes. Given the size of it, it's not a conditional use permit, so we typically won't see that sort of thing in front of the Planning Commission. We could, if going out to our service providers for comment, that we find that there may be some logistical problems with it. But this is just for the stock room, I guess is the best way to describe it. We've got some residential applications in. It's getting busy in the Silver Creek Village area. Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust has their condominium plat for 64 of their units. It's going to be a two-lot subdivision, and then they're going to be dividing the airspace for their condos for future workforce housing. Matt Lowe, who's the master developer at Silver Creek Village, he submitted a sketch plan, which is the first step in the subdivision process for a project he's calling Elk Springs, and that'll be 125 single-family lots in the neighborhood out there. We just got done talking to Charlie Sturgis. Mountain Trails Foundation has submitted a conditional use permit application. They are looking to get approval to move their operations out into the Highland Drive area, the trailside area where I live. The Belcher's Barn, a lot of people will remember the Zebra House where the Children's Justice Center is. Well, there's a barn building and offices behind the new CJC, and they are looking, Mountain Trails are looking to move their operations out there. Listeners might recall about a month or two back, Mountain Trails looked into moving into the little Ivers home that sits just to the north of where Contender Bikes are in the Red Barn by St. Mary's. It appears that Mountain Trails have another opportunity to move into the old Belcher Barn where Park City Towing was, and so that's a new application. Bill White out on Highway 224 at the Bill White Farms is looking to amend his conditional use permit that he has on that property for a new driveway configuration and parking on that property. And that's kind of a tricky little piece there. It sits near the intersection on 248, and there's an increasing number of vehicles parking in the UDOT right away. I've not talked to Bill directly on this, but I'm assuming what he's attempting to do is reconcile some of those parking and circulation conflicts that's happening on the state highway. So the Planning Commission is going to be seeing that. We have a request for a rezone from rural residential to community commercial out in Silver Creek on North Silver Creek Road. This is a relatively new one. I'm not exactly sure what the development plan is associated with that, but we'll be taking that to staff meeting, and maybe I can report back next time when we talk what's involved with that. Low impact permits for Barnes and Silver Creek as well. You can see, I mean, it really runs the gamut of what we're receiving in terms of applications. So,
yeah. So, what do we call this? I mean, what's happening here? I mean, it's like a COVID crush. It's crazy that there's, in the midst of a world pandemic, that we've got all of these people now wanting to build.
You know, we hear that sort of stuff. I'm going to leave the answer to that to smarter minds than I, who might have their finger on the real estate pulse or the development pulse. It could have something to do exactly with that. People are, fleeing the more highly populated areas with the hopes and aspirations that they're going to have a little more space in mountain communities like Summit County in Park City. Could also be that, money at reasonable rates is available to put into projects. I think it's a whole host of those. But if there was a sense out in the community that COVID has killed the planning and zoning world, quite the opposite. I had a conversation with my colleague in Wasatch County, Doug Smith, yesterday afternoon. He is saying in all the years that he's been at Wasatch County, he's probably near or exceeding the busiest he and his department's ever been.
All right, well, let's move on now to the action of the Hideout Town Council, a surprise, I believe, to both Summit County and Park City. What we heard from their attorney, Bruce Barrett, is, hey, we're doing everything by the book. So is this a land grab? And I guess we probably need a little bit of background, and that's basically the Town Council of Hideout voting unanimously for two measures that would pursue annexation into Summit County. Representatives from Summit County, Wasatch County, and Park City asking them to postpone the action. So did you sit through this meeting at all?
Yeah, I did sit through that last night. Let's start off by saying what the Town Council of Hideout did and what they didn't do. What they did last night was adopt a resolution with an intent to annex property within Summit County. They didn't actually annex it. Nothing was brought into Hideout. There isn't a development plan that was a part of that action. This is just sort of the first step, the betrothal, if you might say. None of us knew about this. I happened upon it on Wednesday evening when I was just going through and looking at some of the noticing. What does it mean? Well, it certainly means that hundreds of acres of land, basically northwest of the Wasatch County line and west of existing town of Hideout boundaries, would be brought into the city. I mean, I haven't even had a chance to total up the acreage, but it's a significant amount of acreage. The only parcels that appear not to be included in that quadrant are the lands that are owned by Park City, we refer to as the Clark Ranch, and then the area of the mine soils remediation cell, what we call operating unit number one, that's been carved out of it. We're going to have to really step back and carefully study this. I'm into my fourth decade of doing what I do, so nothing really surprises me. But I guess in this case, you know, we are concerned with the nature by which this was unveiled. I think our next steps are to reach out to our partners, Wasatch County, Park City, and kind of openly and transparently kind of look into this, evaluate what this means. I mean, there's a number of issues that will come into play, and once we've had a chance to do this together, I think we'll formally respond.
Okay. So you did not get advance word from Hideout about this meeting. You just happened to stumble upon it. Is that what you?
Yeah. There was no formal notice. I recall a statement that was made. I'm not sure if it was by the Hideout mayor that someone on staff was going to reach out to the county planner and set up a meeting to discuss this in advance of the meeting. There was no request to formally meet and talk about that. I want to make sure that that's clear on the record.
Okay. Yeah, there are meetings set for July 14th, according to our story here. But so before last night, Summit County did have a general plan amendment before them from Nate Brockbank and Josh Romney. It was, I think, 375 acres, a low-density property that they wanted to develop something more dense on. They have, I believe, since pulled that request off the Planning Commission's agenda. Is this the property we're talking about here that's going set to be annexed by Hideout?
Yeah, that's all part of sort of this complicated story or, you know, proposal for this property. Earlier in the year, we received an application to amend the future land use map for the Snyderville Basin. The basin's made up of basically a dozen and a half neighborhood planning areas. The Quinns Junction area is one of those. The current land use map, future land use map, not a zoning map, future land use map for this area identifies the properties we're talking about as being either very low residential density or open space. The reason they are identified as such has much to do with a long history of joint planning, long-range planning between Summit County and Park City. It also was meant to recognize the fact that on the Richardson's Flat property, Park City Municipal Corporation is the holder of a restricted use covenant for the property that limits that ground to open space uses, recreation uses, equestrian uses, not vertical development. The development rights for that ground years ago were shed from the property and moved up onto what is now Empire Pass. Mr. Brockbank and Mr. Romney had spoken to us about an intent to possibly develop a project out there. Really, the first step to even considering that would be the question of whether or not they could overcome the existing general plan. That was a step even, you know, step precedent to even talking about a rezoning to something. The original proposal came in and it included the grounds that United Park City Mines has around the Richardson Flat. Though that was since taken out of the application because I believe they did not get the appropriate consent from the appropriate authority. So they amended that application to take that out, and it was roughly about 340 acres. It was a piece of property that's owned by JSSD and then the Mayflower Stichting. We had sent it out to service providers like we normally do, and we scheduled it for next Tuesday's Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting early last week. I was contacted by Mr. Brockbank, and he had requested that that be taken off the agenda, that they were looking into a number of matters associated with the property, and he asked that it come off, and so we granted that request. We took it off the Planning Commission agenda, and then saw that it was in front of Hideout. So that's basically the story behind that.
All right. I got a ton of questions here. I'm about 5 minutes left. So apparently some legislation was approved this last session that allows this to happen. Did we completely miss this? Yeah. I mean, we've got a lobbyist. We have designated legislative representative for both Park City and Summit County. Did this just go over our heads?
No, I'm not going to say it went over our heads, but it can be certainly something that we are going to be looking at very carefully as soon as, like, right now. We have people looking into that.
So, yeah, because just 2 days ago, the Summit County Council got a review of the special session, and they were told that nothing significant was approved that could hurt the county. And this sounds like, it could.
Well, and again, there were statements made last night that this pre-annexation resolution met all the necessary standards. We're simply going to go fact check that.
All right. So can Summit County veto Hideout's action? Or do I need to be talking to the county attorney?
Yeah, that's probably a better question. Let me just give you my understanding. Absent any changes in state code, I have always operated under the belief, understanding that if a municipality in another county was going to annex land in a different county, they had to get the consent of that other county. If that other county did not consent, it goes to the State Boundary Commission. Now, if there's been subsequent legislation to change how we do that, we're certainly going to look into that. But I guess the easiest way to answer that, Leslie, is we'll see in the near future. We've got good people working on that.
Yeah. And go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, how many times have you and I talked on the radio and you asked me about regional planning? And I always respond by saying, it's the future. We either work together on some of these development questions or we fail together on them. And, you know, what's important about this, you know, it is just fertile. This is fertile ground for a whole lot of questions. But fundamentally, you know, the thing that I think we need to focus on is we're a web here. The community is a web here. Park City, Summit County, Wasatch County, Hideout. And I think the future is going to prove this true. And the best solutions aren't made in isolation. They're not made by surprises. And I think we are going to step back. We're going to take a deep breath. We're going to be objective and professional. And again, open and transparent with how we communicate. We're not going to hide anything. And we're going to look into this. So it sounds like coming out of last night's meeting, there's a willingness for all the parties to come to the table. I'm happy that it's going to be Park City and Wasatch County and us. And once again, we're going to carefully study it and then have a response.
Okay. It'll be interesting, too. I mean, we could probably talk about it for an hour because I know the Park City Planning Commission also discussing kind of this regional pressure as well at their meeting on Wednesday. So, but I got to leave it there. Pat, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
That's Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. The Park City Council met yesterday to get an update on the Arts and Culture District, sales tax revenues, and more. On the phone with an update, I have Park City Council Member Becca Gerber. Good morning, Becca.
Good morning, Leslie.
So my understanding is that you guys got out very late yesterday, didn't even have a chance to talk about the Hideout action last night.
Yes, it was going on simultaneous to our council meeting.
Okay. And my understanding, though, that you guys will be following up as well?
We will be. We have some staff taking a look at it right now, and we hope to be better informed as the day goes on.
All right. Let's see. You did spend quite a bit of time on the Arts and Culture District update, a pretty standard presentation. Some interesting discussion about connectivity between neighborhoods and walkability around Bonanza Drive. As we heard, money from the 2015 bond will not be used as part of what's always been known as kind of the Dan's to Dan's connection, but instead this remaining $4 million bond money will be used here at the Arts and Culture District. Can you talk to us how that's going to be used?
Yeah, you know, that's not a sure thing at this point in time. The Arts and Culture District is definitely going to be a hub, and there's going to be a lot of connectivity needed from that space to the Jans to Dan's corridor. But we are actually going to have a big discussion on walkability this next week. And I've been told that we will be presented kind of a menu of options that we can discuss, from Dan's to Jans to connectivity to the Arts and Culture District. And really this area is all kind of in the center of our community. And so I believe that there will be some walkability solutions for that corridor discussed as well, including the Homestake to Munchkin Lot is looking, Munchkin Street is looking to be a much larger pedestrian corridor in the future.
All right. Apparently, some early concepts had a bridge connecting the Arts District with the shopping center there across Bonanza. Councilmember Tim Henney said he was disappointed that there was no bridge over Bonanza Drive in the new plans. Is that, again, something that could come back, or is it off the table at this point? Or
So we were told that it is not being heavily discussed at this point in time, but it's not dead. And I think that with, as with so many of our projects right now, we're just trying to take a little bit of a conservative approach and make sure that we are able to really get the bulk of the project and the Arts and Culture District, the heart and the core of it, up and running. And then we can always phase in something like a bridge to add additional connectivity in the future. But with the funding and with COVID and with everything going on right now, we're trying to focus on kind of the meat of the project.
Yeah. So did you like what you saw?
I loved what I saw, and I'm so excited. I hope that people from our community can get a chance to look at some of the sketches and some of the drawings, or it's not even sketches and drawings anymore. It's the plans and the layout and the building design and the concept. I think that they will be able to see those on Facebook Live. The presentation from last night should be live today. It is really looking to be a beautiful area, and the goals are for it to be a locals area first, where it's really meeting some of our local needs as a gathering space, a place for art, a place for connection. So I'm really excited for our residents and for our community to finally start getting to see what this is going to shape up to be.
Deputy City Manager David Everett said that although COVID-19 has complicated the process, many of the pre-construction activities have continued. He's hoping to submit a MPD at the end of the month. In fact, demolition scheduled for this November, construction starting next April, could be opening November of 2023. But how big are the COVID-19 impacts on the funding here?
I think that that's something that time will tell. As of right now, we are factoring in a hit and don't predict that the TRT funding that we are using to fund quite a lot of this will be back up to where it was predicted to be until about 2025, 26. But it was a really well thought out concept and funding concept. We've already done some of the bonding from it. We are using money from an assortment of buckets, from housing to transit, and working with our partners at the Kimball and Sundance. So we do feel like we have the money we need right now to start moving forward.
Okay. And you don't think it will affect the timeline, as I just kind of laid out, at all, huh?
From the graphs and the charts we're looking at, we always have a little bit of a padding moving year to year. So I think that, you know, time will really tell. It depends on what happens this next year and the year following with COVID and whether or not we're able to operate at what level as a resort community. But for right now, we feel fairly confident that we can move forward.
All right. There was also a discussion about the Main Street murals, and I know that coming up at 9 o'clock, the council will be hosting a discussion about this. But at last night's meeting, more than a dozen public comments were read there at the meeting. Only one of them negative about the murals, and this individual saying that he or she will not be coming back to Park City. But my guess is you got a lot more than one negative comment, didn't you?
Yes, we have been receiving emails steadily since Saturday, and they have run the gamut from, you know, a lot of what we heard last night, where I really love this. I'm, as a local park guide, I'm so proud to, I can't believe that Park City would paint that on the street. But we really do feel like, for the most part, our messaging, especially from our residents and from our community, has been really positive.
And artists didn't have to submit a sketch, did they? I mean, you were just like, do what you want?
So we worked very closely with the Summit County Arts Council on this one. We have been hearing that the arts community has really been suffering, again, with since the COVID epidemic pandemic started. And this was a great way for us to help support some local artists to activate Main Street. And we presented the theme and asked to work with Summit County Arts Council. So most of council didn't actually see, or I don't think any of council saw what was actually being painted. We did know that there was going to be large art activations on Main Street along the theme of social equity and Black Lives Matter.
All right. Council Member Nan Worrell was emotional talking about how the murals have sparked a long overdue discussion in the community. She also expressed concern that the council did not seek more public input before greenlighting the project. So do you think that the city rushed the project?
You know, I think we're a community that has always prided ourselves in really seeking as much public input as possible. And at this point in time, this was a little bit, this moved through the city very quickly to get it up and engaged. We didn't officially even cancel the 4th of July until a few weeks ahead. So this did move fairly quickly. But we were commissioned some art to be made on Main Street. And we didn't tell the artist what to paint. It was their interpretation of this theme. So I understand that we have set a precedent for always asking for more transparency. And I think in the future, based on some of the feedback that we've received, we will probably ask for maybe some more discussion. But this kind of unrolled the way it did. And I understand and appreciate Dan's concerns. I personally feel a little bit different, but that's the
sure.
That's the great part about having five people on the council to have these discussions, is that we all bring a little bit of different perspective, and hopefully we're covering the perspectives of our whole community.
This morning's roundtable will be featuring two of the mural artists, Al Jay, who painted the Black Lives Matter mural, and then Miguel, who did the Unity mural. They'll be talking about their intent and messaging, as well as their thoughts about the vandalism. Diego Zagara of the Community Foundation will also be participating. Mayor Andy Bierman wants to use this opportunity for community dialogue and hopefully asking some hard questions before murals are repainted. Is that the plan, to repair them? I mean, or is vandalism a part of Park City's history now, like the mayor said?
You know, the artist, Al Jay, has offered, that did the Black Lives Matter, has offered to reinterpret the design a little bit and come back and repaint it. The overall consensus from council was that we would like to see that done this Sunday, but we are open to hearing from the community. If anyone is really against us having that repainted, please tune in to the Friday roundtable. It does start at 9 a.m. and we'll run until 10, and there will be the artists from the two murals that you mentioned, Jocelyn Scudder, Diego Zagara, and then also Andy and Max, and they'll be having a discussion about the conversations that these murals have sparked, where the community kind of goes from now. I think that these are really important discussions, and it's been really easy for a lot of us in the community to just kind of think that everybody's on the same page, and obviously we're not. Obviously, there's a lot of passion, and there's a lot that kind of needs to be said. And so this has been a great starting point for us. It's really sparked some great community dialogue, and we look forward to being able to continue that conversation this morning and into the future.
All right. And I should just note that people can join the conversation via Zoom. Instructions are on Park City's Facebook page. We have shared them onto the KPCW Facebook page as well. Also wanted to ask you, Becca, about the Huntsman Estate subdivision. This is the proposed subdivision off of Royal Street near Stein Erickson Residences. It was originally one home on several hundred acres. It's now being subdivided, I think, into 15 home sites. It was packaged as an entire sale, but it just has been on the market for years, and they figure they needed to do something else. So an interesting discussion about potentially limiting house size in the Park City, Deer Valley area and the future. How do you feel about that? I mean, it seems like government loves these big homes because of the property taxes they bring in. The bigger the home, the more assessed valuation they have, and the more taxes we get.
Well, I mean, that may be true. But on the other hand, we're having some pretty intense discussions about climate change in our community, about who we want to be as a community, and the resources that we have available here in Park City and in the Wasatch Back. And these big homes are very resource intensive. They use a lot of power. They use a lot of water. They disturb a lot of land. And so I think we've kind of gotten to a point where we just need to have a discussion about house size and what really is fitting with our community and our 20,000 square foot homes, 15,000 square foot homes fitting with our community expectations. What we're seeing a lot of around town are people combining lots and building bigger and bigger. And it also has a big impact on our workforce as well. The maintenance of these homes, the landscaping, a lot of these homes don't have people who live in them as a family, but they have a lot of people that are required to clean and caretake and go in and property manage. And so I think it's just important to have that discussion and really talk about the impact some of these, you know, mega mansions have on our community.
And we should note that you were the lone no vote on this, again, just for those reasons.
I've been asking to have this talk. We've had several projects come through with very large house sizes, and I've been asking to have the conversation. And I feel like we do have an opportunity to discuss putting a cap on some of these house sizes. And I would like to have that, make sure that that is on record and actually have a good public discussion of that sometime soon.
Okay. Beck, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, we've already mentioned the roundtable, and we really do. Please feel free to email us, call us. Our phone numbers are online. Our email addresses are online, or participate in these Zoom webinars and Facebook Live discussions. If you would like to provide some input about what you think should happen to the murals on the street in the next few weeks, it is temporary art, and it will fade fairly quickly. So if we do the repaint, it needs to be done this weekend or fairly shortly. Otherwise, it won't make sense to have that done. So we look forward to hearing from the community about their thoughts and continued participation in our social equity discussions.
All right. Park City Council Member Becca Gerber, thanks for your time this morning.
Yes, thank you.
Well, Holy Cross Ministries was chosen by the more than 1,400 members of the Women's Giving Fund as the recipient of this year's $40,000 Large Impact Grant. On the phone with details, I have the Executive Director of the Park City Community Foundation, Katie Wright, who oversees the Women's Giving Fund, along with the Executive Director of Holy Cross Ministries, Emmy Gardner. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Katie, why don't you start? Just give us a little bit of background. We had three well-deserving organizations here.
Absolutely. Well, the mission of the Park City Community Foundation is to address Park City's greatest needs. And one of our core programs is the Women's Giving Fund. In 2014, we set out to ensure that there are significant financial resources here in our community to address the evolving needs of women and children. And so we built an endowment, and it was a community effort. We have 1,400 women who are members and have made that possible. And every year we make a high impact grant. So as you mentioned, we have three amazing finalists this year, Holy Cross Ministries, Park City Education Foundation, and the Hope Alliance. And we were just thrilled to see Holy Cross Ministries win the $40,000 grant.
Yeah. So I think $40,000 is the most ever. And this, again, during a pandemic.
So the good news is that we are managing our endowments very carefully, and we have always wanted to be able to be generous in hard times. And so we are careful in good times. And so, yes, we were able to make the $40,000 grant. We understand that the needs are acute here. So now more than ever, it's a time to step up.
Sure. And also, I know you have given the second and third place finalists money in the past as well, but both of them receiving, I mean, 20 grand is each a pretty significant windfall. Yeah.
I know. It's really wonderful. We're so happy. We had three anonymous donors step up this year to make that possible. So, yes, both of the other nonprofits who have wonderful programs received $20,000 finalist grants. So we're just over the moon.
Yeah. How many of the memberships of, 1,400 plus actually voted this year?
You know, I am not sure. I'm completely kept in the dark on the voting process because it is top secret. I don't know the winner until every other Women's Giving Fund member knows the winner. So I actually don't have that number at hand. I apologize.
That's all right. Well, let's bring in Emmy into the conversation. Congratulations, Emmy, to you and Holy Cross Ministries.
Thank you, Leslie. We are really humbled and super honored for this award.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the organization. I know it's been around here in Park City for a long time.
Yeah, going on our 25th year as an organization, a social service, 501c3, but around 20 years there in the Summit County and the Wasatch Back. And you know, I just wanted to kind of highlight for folks too that, you know, we serve clients regardless of their race, religion, or sexual orientation. While we may have kind of a key component in our Latinx community, we serve all immigrant and vulnerable populations. And our vision really is to be distinguished by our unrelenting and adaptive focus on really building and celebrating just, compassionate, sustainable, and inclusive communities. And so this grant will definitely help us to do that, because what we're going to do with the funds is use this to expand our trauma-informed, bilingual, bicultural therapy services. And we're really grateful to People's Health Clinic, one of our partners, because they're allowing housing, office space for us to do those therapy services at the People's Health Clinic, so that we can, in essence, create this sort of one-stop shop for many of the clients that Beth's APRN has been referring out in the past, and that can be anywhere from 15 to 20 clients a month.
Wow. So just back, I mean, you mentioned that this is not a religious organization, but with a name like Holy Cross Ministries, it sure sounds like it is.
You know, and that has, I think, been a bit of our identity crisis, so I appreciate you asking that, Leslie, because we are a faith-sponsored organization. Many people who may live in the community that remembered Holy Cross Hospital would remember that that hospital was founded by a Catholic organization of sisters called the Sisters of the Holy Cross. When they sold the hospital back in the mid-90s, they didn't want to leave the Utah community and wanted to find another way to be able to still give back to the community, and that's when they formed the social service agency. Because they are a Catholic organization, they talk about any of their work and as ministries. So we are sponsored by this historic group of amazing, as I call, fierce do-gooders. But again, we serve anyone regardless of, you know, their faith background, agnostic, atheist. It isn't that. It's just that the legacy of the Holy Cross Sisters is what drives our passion going forward.
And are the sisters still involved?
You know, I wish I could say there were as many as in the early days when they were there, but I just think making a choice into religious life is not something that's been a U.S. kind of thing anymore. And so at this point, we have, of the nearly 30 staff, only two are sisters, and one is semi-retired. Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely, it's again, like I said, we're living their legacy and their desire to do good in truly creating, you know, supporting the needs of the vulnerable community.
So where is the ministries? Where are you located?
So we have, our main office is actually off of 45th South and 9th East in Salt Lake City. But then we also have services up in Park City. We have Promotora and Parents as Teachers staff located at People's Health Clinic. We'll now add this therapist to that. We have a school readiness classroom at St. Mary's because they've gifted us the space there for that classroom. But then we actually are doing, like we do with People's Health Clinic, we do a lot of community partnerships. We're very collaborative, and so we actually provide services at Neighborhood House in Salt Lake. So we look to where, while we have a home base, we really are deploying our staff in the community so we could be closer to the clients we need to serve.
All right. And then specifically with this grant, as you talked about, you know, expanding the trauma therapy, are other organizations not offering this, like Peace House or Children's Justice Center or even the Christian Center? I know does have some therapy involved.
They all do, and we work super closely with them as part of the Summit Mental Wellness Alliance. But the challenge is that there aren't enough bilingual, bicultural therapists. I mean, truly, if in any situation, you know, there are language lines, there are interpretation services, but really, when it comes to trauma-informed therapy, you know, that catchphrase of it's sort of lost in translation really does happen. And so really being able to have bilingual, bicultural therapists who have the background and specialization in trauma-informed care really helps kind of expedite that trusting relationship and really helps many of in our immigrant community to really begin that journey to healing and finding their own kind of passion and voice. And for many of the women and their children leaving, you know, what are potentially life-threatening situations in domestic violence.
And we have heard that anecdotally just with regards to the caseload at the Children's Justice Center and the Peace House during this you know, kind of stay-at-home lockdown. Are you seeing something similar as well?
We are. We actually had to ramp up, and we're starting up two additional, we've been able to garner two additional graduate students so that we can get more groups started because our waiting list is continuing to grow, and we don't want people just to sit on the waiting list, so that we're trying to start them within a group therapy situation until we have room to move them into an individual therapy situation. And so, yes, our therapy wait list is, I want to say, I think the last we looked at it, we had like over 60 on the waiting list. And so we're going to be instituting three more groups beginning soon, and one of the groups will be happening there up in Park City so that we can manage that wait list as well.
All right. Yeah. Katie or Emmy, anything else you'd like to say about this year's grant?
I'll just add that we're so grateful for women who continue to join. We had 60 new members in the past year, and we also have women who continue to give to the Women's Giving Fund so we can grow that impact. So congratulations to Holy Cross Ministries. It's such an important program, and we're also thrilled to see that Hope Alliance and Park City Education Foundation are receiving support. So we just thank our 1,400 members and sponsors for making it all possible.
Okay. Again, congratulations to Holy Cross Ministries. Oh, Emmy, go ahead.
Thank you. No, I was going to say, and just thank you to all on the Women's Giving Fund. We are so, so truly appreciative.
All right. Thanks both for your time. Appreciate it. Again, plan to join the conversation on Zoom for Park City's racial equality-themed street murals, a conversation happening in just a few minutes here with Park City Mayor Andy Bierman, Councilmember Max Dorney, and guest panelists for the roundtable discussion. Again, it's starting at 9 o'clock. All perspectives are welcome and encouraged. You can get instructions about how to join that on the city's Facebook page, as well as the KPCW Radio Facebook page as well. And in the headlines this morning, the Town Council of Hideout meeting last night voted unanimously for two measures that would pursue annexation into Summit County near Quinns Junction and Richardson Flat, although representatives for Summit County, Park City, and Wasatch County did ask them to postpone action. Hideout's mayor told them that there is still time in the process for stakeholders to get information and to provide input. The town council voted first to authorize Mayor Phil Rubin to enter into a pre-annexation agreement with developer Nate Brockbank. They also approved a resolution of intent to pursue this annexation. Asked for a response, Summit County Councilmember Chris Robinson had little comment, but he did tell KPCW this is clearly a very surprising, unwelcome, and disturbing maneuver. Mayor Rubin said that the town, located at the northern edge of Wasatch County near Highway 248, approved a new general plan back in February of 2019. Later in August, the town determined that the goals of the plan couldn't be met with its existing annexation area. They approved a new area, including parcels in Summit County. The mayor said that the Utah legislature in its recent special session also paved the way for Hideout. Lawmakers changed state code to allow a municipality to annex into the unincorporated area of a bordering county. He said that Brockbank, who has purchased rights in the Summit County acreage, is interested in partnering with Hideout. The pre-annexation agreement would stipulate how they work together and would finalize a development proposal. In the electronic public hearing, Summit County Councilmember Robinson said he had objected to Hideout's expanded annexation area last August, and he added that the county had only seen a map of the proposed annexation Thursday night.
Of course, this is quite a land grab from our perspective, and we're a bit chagrined that city government wouldn't at least give us some notice of this action. It's only by happen chance that we're participating tonight.
In reply, Attorney Bruce Baird, representing Brockbank Investments, says they're willing to talk later, but they did want a decision from Hideout Council last night to start the clock on the process. A meeting is scheduled for July 14th with a couple of Summit County Council members and staff, along with the mayor of Hideout. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. I've got a couple of weeks coming off. Carolyn Murray will be filling in for me. I'll see you after the July 24th holiday. This is KPCW Park City.